Okay, so looking at the Joshua generation, and the Joshua generation came out of Egypt, they went through the wilderness, and they came from slavery to sonship, because they'd been 430 years as slaves, and therefore they didn't know their identity. And when we've lived in Egypt, in the world, we get our identity from the world, and then when we come into a dynamic of relationship with God, He wants to take us from that worldly view into a view of sonship. So that relationship with the Father releases us into sonship. And without a relationship with the Father, there is no sonship. Yeah. Because without a father, you can't have a son. So God wants to bring us into that. But there's a process of transfiguration, transformation, metamorphosis. They're the same Greek word. But that means there's a process that restores our identity as sons of God and brings us to maturity. Because we can be sons, but we can be baby sons. And baby sons, it's great being a baby son, but we have to grow up. And God is calling His church, His people, to grow up into maturity. And in that area of maturity, then, that brings responsibility. As a child, as a son, you have very little responsibility. And your parents look after you. I mean, they look at you, then they send you to school and all those things. But as you get older, then there are things that you have to take responsibility for in your own life. And as sons of God, we can't stay babies. We have to mature. When we mature, that brings responsibility to rule, to bring dominion. So the sonship mandate of Genesis 1, that mandate to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill the earth, to subdue, and to rule, that is the maturity of sonship. But we have to go through the process. It isn't an instant makeover. But we are mature one day. We grow, just like in natural life. And even Jesus, it says He grew in wisdom and stature with God and man. So the Joshua generation, who are they? Well, they're sons. They've been through the wilderness, and I think probably looking around here, everyone's been through the wilderness or still in it in some way. But God led a people to come into the promised land. The wilderness was never their inheritance. It was just a place of transition to come into something which was the fullness of God's inheritance for them. For them, that would be their 12 tribes coming into the land. For us, it's coming into our authority as sons of God, seated in the heavenly places, exercising that authority to fulfill God's kingdom, to come fill the earth. There must be those who spied out the promised land. So to go from the wilderness, you have to have an encounter to show you, hey, there's more. And the Joshua generation, because it was only Joshua and Caleb in that generation, there was only two of them who'd spied out the promised land. But in our day, God is giving glimpses of the realms of heaven, spiritual dynamics beyond what we've seen before. And those glimpses are to inspire us, not to stay, there's giants. I'm not sure I want to go and deal with the giants. Yeah, of course there's things we have to face. Of course there's things we have to overcome. That was the whole mandate, to subdue, to overcome. But we have to see beyond the veil. You know, the veil is open. Jesus has torn the veil. He's invited us to come beyond the veil. And those who are a part of the Joshua generation will go beyond the veil. But then they don't want to go there on their own. Because Joshua and Caleb then came back and said, hey, here's a good report. This land belongs to us. But then there were 10 spies who gave a bad report. So when you have encounters with God and revelation, there may be 10 people who say, no, that's not right. You can't go there. You know, you're deceived. You know, don't listen. You know, if the people, children of Israel, had listened to the 2 rather than the 10, the majority doesn't always rule in the kingdom. So if you've had an encounter and God is drawing you, don't be put off by others. Because there's always the thought police out there in the body of Christ who want to control everyone's thinking and keep it tied up to what has always been. When God is always progressively unveiling things. You know, there's a progressive sense of revelation. It doesn't mean that God's changed. It doesn't mean that His intention has changed. but it means that we change so that we get more understanding and experience with it. Because we have to change to come into that revelation. It's always been there, but it is progressively unveiled. So there are things being revealed in our day that weren't revealed in the previous generation. And there were previous generation things that weren't revealed in that generation. Now, unfortunately, up to this point, generally what's happened is revelation gets released. Wow, this is amazing. And then the denomination forms, and then they put a barrier around it. And then God brings more revelation. And don't go there. That's not our revelation. So you can't go there. And they oppose what God is doing, and they get rigid and they get fixed, and then they end up fossilizing rather than continuing to grow. And if they had embraced what God was doing, they could have imparted everything that they had brought and then joined with the new revelation. Then they could have joined with the new revelation and a new revelation. And God's desire is that we all come together as one, not as a whole load of separate groups who are all defending their doctrinal position against everyone else. You know, because God did say things to them, but they enshrined it. I remember hearing a sad story of, in the US, there was this amazing encounter where this church, there was this plastic Perspex sort of large sort of thing at the front of the hall where people spoke from, lectern. And one day, the power of God came and split it in two. Just came into the meeting. The whole lectern just split in two. And they were like, whoa. And the power of God came on that church, and they had a move of God. And you know where that lectern is now? In a glass case. And they look at it and they have no more experience because they kept wanting what God was doing then, and God moved and they didn't move with it. So now it's just an idol of what was. And we can all do that in our lives. And we must remain flexible. And God is calling us to go beyond the veil individually, but then to call others to say, hey, it's wonderful over here. You know, I've experienced things I've never seen before. Yeah, and we're all on that journey. We're all at different stages, but we're on a journey to cross over. And if you're willing to cross over, then you must be willing to bring another generation with you. So those who've heard responded to the call to enter within the veil and take up their positions as royal priests. Yeah, we are a royal priesthood. That is a heavenly priesthood, because there's no earthly priesthood anymore. The old covenant priesthood became obsolete. Jesus introduced a new priesthood, the order of Melchizedek, which is a heavenly priesthood who operate beyond the veil as kings and priests. And we've all got that responsibility if we go beyond the veil. Anyone who's going to be part of the Joshua generation must be willing to be mentors for the next generation. There is a harvest. That's just a harvest of harvesters. Jesus said the fields are white under harvest, but there are not enough laborers. I believe that the prophecy that was given in 1975 for a billion-fold harvest is going to take place. We've had a generation to prepare for it. We failed to prepare for it. And God says from 8th of the 8th, 1975, to 8th of the 8th, 2015, that generation ended and a new generation has begun. And 888, which was 8th of August, 2015, if you say 2158, triple new beginnings. So you have a triple new fresh start for a new generation. So we must be ready to receive the harvest and lead those into their supernatural inheritance and release them. Not control them, release them, empower them to go and become the harvesters. Because God isn't going to be content with a billion people. He wants the whole world. So we need the laborers to go engage the world, bring in the kingdom, demonstrating the power of God, heavenly manifestations on earth, cities of refuge, all those things is established. So the Joshua generation must be willing to establish storehouses or embassies of heaven on the earth ready for the harvest. Because if the harvest comes, where is it going to go? Who's going to disciple those people? Who's going to equip them? Who's going to release them? God isn't going to send them into the existing churches, because they would come under the same coverings of men that people are under, and they will have nowhere to go. They'll be contained within the structure. Whereas what we're seeing is God establishing is a foundation of government which releases people to hear God for themselves and engage God. So we must be ready for the harvest. You know, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about a harvest. They talk a lot about heavenly encounters, a lot about galaxies, and a lot about all sorts of stuff. But what about the harvest here? Yeah, we're never going to take the solar system or the galaxy or the universe unless we've got this planet back into its rightful place. So we need to see the restoration of all things take place. Well, how is that going to be restored? Through us. We're co-heirs in this kingdom. So we've got to be ready for a harvest. The Joshua generation operates according to the heavenly government of the order of Melchizedek. That is represented by the four faces of God in heaven, on earth: lion, ox, eagle, man, king, prophetic, apostolic, priestly. And those are the order of Melchizedek, and they work together with God and man, because God has included us in his government, which is the most amazing thing. He's chosen to use us. Yeah, and he's waiting for us to come to a place of maturity so that we can actually bring his rule. So the order of Melchizedek, I mean, obviously a whole huge teaching in itself in terms of what is a priest, what is a king, what is a prophet, what is an apostle. And we're not talking about fivefold ministry. Fivefold ministry are to equip the saints for service here in this realm. We're talking about a heavenly government, which is always then patterned on the earth as the reflection of that government, not the copy of it. And we saw that diagram, not a mountain where people sit on top, but a mountain which is inverted so everyone can hear God for themselves. No one has to go through a mediator other than Jesus. No men covering us. And anyone who says that they're your covering, I will get out from under it, because they're bound to be restricted. You know, anyone says that they're your foundation to lift you up, well, then that's a good place to be, because you can see God and engage God for yourself. So this whole order is an order that brings a heavenly government to the earth to outwork to bring change. And all of us should actually be a reflection of those four faces. But some of us will have a leaning towards one or another. Some of us may lean towards the lion, and we like roaring. Bring in order, because the lion is a kingly perspective to bring governmental order. Some, the ox. But the prophet, they go into the deep things of God and they release them out. Or the eagle, the one who soars to see the bigger picture and begins to bring legislative order, to bring things into the right patterns. And the priestly function, go into the intimacy things with God and to be that place of intersection between God and man to draw people into relationship. And that's obviously, you know, one sentence on each. I've got a whole teaching on each of them, probably teachings and a few, you know, other things. But so those establishing the kingdom in heaven, so it can be released through them as gateways into the earth. That is the Joshua generation. We are a house of God. We also can engage the house of God. We can be a gateway of heaven, and heaven can flow through us. So rivers of living water, the river of life flowing out from the throne of God, flowing through our spirit, out through us to the world to bring life wherever it goes. You know, and you know, as I said before, you know, we cannot get by with a trickle that's coming under the threshold of the door. We have to open that door every day and let the river flow. And some people said, well, isn't it open all the time? No, because we function on a day to day. There's new mercies. There's fresh grace for the day. Jesus said, don't be concerned to tomorrow. And don't worry, because today you will have everything you need. Seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and everything else will be added for today. So every day I need to choose to surrender, because it's a new day. Yesterday's gone. I can't go on what I did yesterday and make an assumption. And God is not going to make an assumption that I've surrendered to him today unless I do. Now, it's an attitude of heart what we live in, but when we open that first love gate every day and allow heaven to flow through us, then it can flow out. There's a river flowing, but it needs to flow out. If it flows in and doesn't go out, it ends up like the Dead Sea. Nothing living. If it flows out, then it brings life wherever it goes. So we create an atmosphere of God's love, glory, peace, joy, all the fruit of the Spirit around us. And in that atmosphere of light, because we can radiate light, the sons of light, then the world will be drawn to God, because they will see God in us, because we are supposedly Jesus with skin on to people. So we demonstrate his love, his grace, his mercy, his power, his healing, the miracles, and all the demonstrations of the kingdom are just the works of the kingdom. They're not the kingdom. And sometimes we get so caught up with the works of the kingdom that we don't realize that you have to establish the kingdom in heaven so it can be outworked on the earth. And eventually all those works, you end up worn out working without government established. So when the government's established in heaven, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So we are called to do the as it is in heaven and establish it. So the Joshua generation will be those, if they're sons, responding to creation's groan. The whole of creation is groaning. The whole of the created order, the heavens and the earth, it's not just the physical realm that we see, it's the spiritual realm also that we don't see with our natural eyes. It's groaning. It's waiting for restoration. It's waiting for us to come back together. Because heaven and earth, when God first created it, were together. They weren't independent or separate. And God wants to bring that back. And the heavens themselves want earth to come back. The created and the spiritual and the physical coming back in together. So the sons of God need to release a frequency. That frequency will bring restoration to all things. In fact, the whole, everything has a frequency, a vibrational sound, a frequency that is supposed to be in harmony. So the whole of the creation is supposed to be a harmonious symphonic sound, but it's not. It's discordant, and therefore it's groaning. And as we bring our frequency together, it will raise the frequency of the earth to come back into alignment with heaven's frequency. And the frequency of the earth is called Schumann's frequency. And you can see it is rising. It's elevating because they measure it. But we have a frequency as an individual. Each of our organs has a frequency. And we need to live in health. So each of our parts of our body need to live in the frequency of health and wholeness, not the low frequencies that happen with disease. Now, people are catching on to this, and they're using fragrant oils and some of the things that God's created, which carry a high frequency within them to raise people's body frequencies. Now, I personally don't use that. I'm not into smelly things, really. But you know, people in the church do. I've lived in health for 20-odd years because I engaged with God as my healer, so I can live in health. And I haven't been sick for 20 odd years because I overcame an incurable disease by engaging God and trusting him. And he unveiled healing and health to me, and I've lived that way ever since. So I have no problem with the fragrant oils. I just don't need them. But, you know, other people use them and they're effective. But it's all talking about frequency. So we actually emanate from us a frequency, an atmosphere, which is love. Because the highest frequency in the universe is love, because God is love. And it's love which is really going to change the world. Yeah. Yeah.
I smell the oil of heaven.
Yeah.
We have an oil from heaven.
Yeah.
That will heal us. Isn't that
wonderful? Oh, totally, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, for some people, these just seem strange things to talk about frequency and vibrations and things like that. But this is how God created the whole universe. The whole universe is held together by the power of his voice, the vibrational frequency of his voice, which he spoke out in creation and is still vibrating through everything. And we can connect with everything and so bring restoration to all things. So we need to walk as sons of light, releasing the sound and light of heaven onto the earth. Because when Jesus was here, he said he's the light of the world. But he also said that we're to be the light of the world, a city on a hill that cannot be hidden, so the people can see what it is to be part of God's kingdom and operate from a whole different realm of authority and power that isn't subject to the circumstances of the world in which we live. But we are to change and transform the world by living in a totally different dimension and operating as creative sons of light, because we are created light beings. Our spirit is a light being. And when you go into heaven, you often see yourself and see others in the way your mind has an image of how things look. But actually, when you actually tune in, you see light. So when Paul engaged in the Damascus Road, he didn't see Jesus as a man. He saw a light come around him. It was so bright that it blinded him. And it says in Galatians that the revelation of who he was, that Jesus was in him, was unveiled. And it took him 3 years in the desert to get his head around it, because it totally blew open his whole theological, Pharisaical view of the truth. And it took him 3 years to get to a point where he was able to express that. And then God took him a few years later into heaven. And then he has a whole other things that he can express. And then it takes 14 years before he writes his first letter. So, you know, it takes time to actually come into a revelation of who we really are. And even when we have the encounters, our mind needs to be renewed. We need to be changed and transformed. God wants us to be walking in light and being light and releasing that creative light of heaven into the earth. I was at a conference. It was actually an Ian Clayton conference. It was in Cardiff in Wales. Yeah. And I was, yeah, that was a time of worship, and I was standing there just enjoying the worship. And these men in white linen came. And they came and stood. There was Joshua, there was Joseph, there was Enoch, and there was Daniel. And Joshua and Joseph stood on my left and right, and Enoch stood behind me, and Daniel was in front of me. And I'm like, whoa. And I'm completely in this. I've lost sight of the room. I'm just seeing these four men in white linen, and they lift up my arms. And I'm sort of standing there, and it was a really powerful encounter. And as they lifted up my arms, I felt strong. I mean, I just felt strength just flood into my body. This was 2015, and I think it was August. It was actually the week before the 8th of the 8th of August. So for what was coming, this was an empowering, and it was a revelatory thing of the full nature of the Joshua generation, because it isn't just Joshua that's part of the dynamic that we're called to. And it was almost like heaven was open, the gates of heaven were open, heaven and earth just seemed to be overlapped. You know, I was just in a realm of overlap. You know, you go to heaven, it's great. God comes and meets us here, it's great. But when heaven and earth come into alignment, it's a different dynamic. I can't describe it to you, because I'm trying to describe spiritual things in terms that we can understand, which are difficult sometimes, but it's an amazing thing when heaven comes back into alignment. And this was a little glimpse of that. So the Joshua generation have a different spirit. You know, that's what it says. Caleb had a different spirit, because Caleb and Joshua were that generation. They had a different spirit. Their spirit was not, we're going to give up. They had a strong spirit that says, we're going to take the land. And Caleb, when he was in his 80s, he went in and out to war every day. His age made no difference to his power and authority in the kingdom. And he even said, give me the high ground. Because as I was talking yesterday, if you're on the high ground, then you have an advantage. And the high ground, which was Hebron, which was the most best piece of land in the whole of Israel, was occupied by giants. And they were, but he was like, no, give me the high ground. I'll go and take it. And he did. And he slayed the giants. Because he had a different spirit. Joshua and Caleb had a different spirit. How did they get that different spirit? When you look at the characteristics of Joshua and Caleb and others, they spent time lingering in the presence of God, even when Moses left. They stayed in the meeting tent. They embraced God. God took them into a different realm of experience with him. And they grew in that as they went through the wilderness. So the wilderness for them was a place of deeper and deeper and deeper intimacy in preparing them to cross over. Where for Moses, it became less and less and less intimate until he got to a point of disobedience. You know, the Joshua generation are giant slayers, and that generation needs to mentor the next generation. So the Joshua generation will also be the Joseph, Daniel, and Enoch generation. That's why these four men and white women came. They were saying, hey, we've got a part to play in here. You know, Joshua's getting his names out there, but actually, what about us? Because they were saying, look, there's aspects of our character, nature, and what we did that this generation needs to actually come into. So Enoch walked with God in heaven and on earth. That's how he walked with God. God wasn't on the earth. So Enoch walked in the heavens. He was often called a star walker. He walked with God, and one day he didn't come back. So there's an aspect of the generation that we're in that must be those who walk with God in heaven, and because God's in us, we're walking in this realm with a demonstration of heaven and the kingdom coming through us. Genesis 5:24, Enoch walked with God and he was not, for God took him. So one day God said, right, you're not going back. And Enoch has a large part to play in our generation and in mankind coming into the fullness of who we are. And often he's given me quests and different things when I've engaged him. I tried to avoid him because he kept giving me things to do. But you can engage with him. You know, he is alive. He never died. You know, so those who struggle to think, well, how do I talk to dead people? Well, they're not dead. Everyone's alive in heaven. But Enoch never died in the first place. So you shouldn't have that problem talking to him because he never died. And, you know, and the same with Elijah. And of course, Jesus talked with Elijah and Moses as a demonstration of, hey, he can talk to the living and those who physically died because they're not spiritually dead. They're alive with him because eventually he led them out of Abraham's bosom into heaven so that they're now in that realm. When he led captivity captive, when he went and preached to those under the earth and in resurrection power resurrected them up into heaven. So you can read more about Enoch. It obviously doesn't say a lot in the Bible, but there's a book, the Book of Enoch, which is actually quoted from in the Bible, which gives it validation. Jesus quoted from it. Jude quoted from it. Others did. Read it. It's a bit heavy going in places. And I read, because I met Enoch and he said, read my book. You know, so, okay. Now, he didn't write it, but it's a book about him. And I thought, next time I thought, see him, I think, well, I better read it. Otherwise, I'll be really embarrassed if he comes up and says, have you read my book? Oh, no, I haven't had time yet. So I plowed through some of it. But some of it's very interesting in terms of what happened with the watcher angels, how the watcher angels fell. Enoch prophesied, and it says in Jude, his prophecy was God coming with myriads of angels. You know, prophesying about our day. That's why he's invested into it. So engage that. You know, there's a whole load of things there. Daniel 12:4. As for you, Daniel, conceal these words, seal up the book until the end of time. Many will go back and forth and knowledge will increase. So I believe we're in that time. We're coming to the end of time. Not the end times, because the end times of, what are they? You know, people say, well, we're the end of the end of the end. You know, I think we're in a day where we're coming to a point where we're going into a new age. And not a new age, spooky new age, but a age to come new age. Because it says in Hebrew, in Ephesians, there are ages to come. And we're coming to an end. There was an end of an old covenant age in AD 70 when the final destruction of the temple completely removed the authority of the old covenant. Now we're in the kingdom age. And people talk about the church age, the kingdom age, and there's all sorts of people saying, well, there's eight ages and, you know, and there's 12. You know, I'm not going to go into that now, but there are. And actually, we're in a point where if revelation is going to be released, what better time is there than this? When information is going to and fro. I can pick up my phone and I can pick up something that happened on the other side of the world and know virtually instantly. That's the time to release revelation, when all the world can receive it, not just through special people who keep it secret. Because if people keep it secret, that gives them power. The revelation that Jesus is releasing through the unveiling of these books is for everybody, not just for the people out there somewhere or up there somewhere. It's everybody. And we must not keep that knowledge to ourselves. Freely we've received, freely give. And it's God's desire that that revelation will be released throughout the earth. And that's why I think we're in this time when that can take place. You know, we can actually see something live that's happening the other side of the world. We'll go back 500 years. They'd have to wait for a boat to travel with the news, and it could be months or years later that news was received. So we're in a very privileged time. Daniel saw into our day and sealed up what he saw. Now he's released it. So we're in a day where the books, the revelation is being unveiled for us so we can come into the fullness of our identity as sons. Then there's Joseph. And I love the story of Joseph. I love how he went through his life and how God prepared him, because it's the wilderness journey. For all of us, we've all been through things like Joseph. You know, how many of us have had a vision and we've had to go through difficult things to see that full vision fulfilled? You know, that's how it often is. Genesis 41:14, Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph. Joseph was in the prison. He'd been betrayed and sold by his family. He was then let down by a guy, you know, the wife, who a Potiphar accused him of, you know, molesting her, basically a lie, but he ended up in prison. Even in prison, he did amazing things, and then he was forgotten. Now was his time. Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and had changed his clothes, then he was brought into a position of authority. Verse 38, it says, Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? Well, isn't that what the world is going to be looking for? Isn't he going to say to us, about us, there is someone who carries the Spirit of God? And Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, so there's revelation that we have, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house. So Joseph is brought out of a prison of obscurity and put on the center of the world stage to be in charge of the whole of Egypt. Well, if we're going to come into the fullness of our government, the governments of this world will recognize the wisdom and discernment and the power and authority and knowledge that we have that comes out of heaven. When they're struggling, when all their systems are collapsing, and when the mountain of the house of the Lord gets lifted up, all the hills and other mountains beneath them come to nothing. What does it say? Let's go up to the mountain of the house of the Lord, because there is the truth. There will be the answers to disease and sickness and poverty and everything else, because we're going to live as on heaven on earth. That's what an embassy of heaven does. Represents heaven's values on earth, not subject to the earthly values. Just like the English-British embassy in New Zealand is not subject to New Zealand law. A heavenly embassy is not subject to the laws of the land. I'm not talking about paying your taxes and all that stuff. I'm talking about the spiritual effects. We will not be subject to the things that are going on in the world. And eventually, even Jesus said, well, if you need to pay your taxes, go and materialize some money. You know, manifest it. He did it in a fish's mouth. You know, I have no desire to go fishing. You can manifest it in a pot somewhere. Whatever, because he did that. Why? So we could see we can do that. So the whole thing will change when we come into a position of authority. And the church will be raised up. Not the religious institution, the people. As the people of God, in unity with one another, will be raised up. And we will be those who have that authority. Now, it requires some change, because we can't do it with our old prison rags. So we can't be prisoners in captivity, in prisons. But then the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon us to do what? Set the captives free. Release people from prisons. And God's power is to release us from the prisons of our own life, our own mind, our past, to bring us into the fullness of sonship, so we can see ourselves the way he sees us. So there is a change of clothes that needs to take place. And we're in that place of transformation where we are being transfigured from the old way that we used to live and the old way we used to be, to literally being transfigured so we are radiators of light. And some people are being caught on film and camera glowing with light. all of us, I think, will have the capacity to be that way as we're brought from where we've been into who we are as sons of God. So Joseph came out of prison. That was obscurity. No one knew he was there. And for by and large, most of the world does not know we exist. It's not going to stay that way. They will see us radiating the glory of God. Yeah, Isaiah 60, arise, shine, your light has come. The glory of the Lord has risen upon you. Kings will come to the brightness of your rising. Things are going to change. You know, but we may have had to have gone through rejection and being let down and being betrayed and being misunderstood and being accused of things we haven't done. But hey, Joseph didn't let go of his dream. He was still there when someone said, we need a dream interpreting, which opened up the door of revelation because he was able to hear the voice of God. And then what did Joseph actually do? And this is the interesting thing. Genesis 1, 41, 48, he gathered all the food of 7 years, because remember the dream was 7 fat cows and 7 lean cows, interpreted as 7 good years of harvest and then 7 years of famine. When the famine comes to the world, I'm not saying that's necessarily a physical famine, but there will be a famine in comparison with what God's kingdom is going to be, then the world is going to be looking for answers. They're going to be looking for food, spiritual food. What happened? He gathered all this food for 7 years and he placed it in food cities, in storehouses. And he gathered it from every surrounding area. And he actually says he took 20% of it. And then people all over the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph. Think of that as the harvest. He gathered the harvest. We're going to gather 20% of the world's population as the harvest. Who will then be the harvesters that the world is going to come to for salvation, for healing, for wholeness? But we've got to be creating those cities, those places, those storehouses to receive the harvest. That's why Joseph is an important picture for the generation in which we live. So are you prepared to be a forerunner? That's the thing. Because there's a cost to pay in pursuing, going beyond, being accused, potentially. Are you prepared to cross over and give a good report to others? And encourage people to come into their inheritance? Are you willing to operate as sons of God in the heavenly realms? Are you willing to be servant-hearted leaders who will promote and give that next generation the boost so that truly our ceiling can be their floor and we will lift them up? Yeah. There's a great film called Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. And it's about lifting the next generation up and bringing them into, because we're giants in the kingdom, but that means we don't keep people down. It means we can lift people up. So if you feel called to be part of the Joshua generation, I have a declaration that I'd just like to pray over you and release over you to stir your spirit into that. And then we'll go into an activation where we can go into the realms of heaven and you can get invested with authority and power from Jesus. So if your spirit resonates with this, great. If not, it's okay, forget it. But I encourage you to just close your eyes and just allow your spirit to engage. Now think of God calling you, not me. I'm just going to say the words, but this is God speaking to you. I call to your spirit, and I call your spirit to attention. Listen as a true son of God. I call forth your identity as the Joshua generation, according to the order of Melchizedek. I call forth your destiny to manifest God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. I call forth your destiny to fill the earth with God's glory. I call forth your identity, destiny, and authority as lords, to administrate God's rule on earth as it is in heaven. I call forth your identity, destiny, and authority as kings to have charge over the heavenly courts. I call forth your identity, destiny, and authority as sons to stand in God's presence and be displayed on the earth. I call forth your identity, destiny, authority as sons of God to answer creation's groan, to restore it to original purpose and condition. I call forth the Joshua generation to rise up and take possession of their inheritance. Now just allow that to resonate in your spirit. Let your spirit respond to that call and come into the revelation and the position of sonship that God wants you to have. When I've been engaging around the world, one of the things that God has shown me is the need to establish heavenly government in a nation, in a area, in a group. And without that heavenly government, then you don't get heaven manifested. And one of the things he's shown me is a crown. And this crown has 24 points on the crown. And it has a center of the crown, which represents God, Father, Son, and Spirit. And it brings together the nation together in authority. Now, we're not talking about hierarchical authority. We're talking foundational authority. But each of these points of the crown, which looks like a mountain, is a bench of governmental authority that God is going to establish. And it represents the fullness of the old and the new coming together, the 24 elders of heaven represented on earth as a crown of God's government. And I believe God is wanting to draw people together, connect them, and inspire them and call them into their authority in God's kingdom, so that in New Zealand and in the US and Australia and Britain and all the other nations, the crown of God's government is going to be seen, that his kingdom is going to be displayed. And to do that, we have to engage heaven. We can't do it with an earthly administration of trying to figure it all out and set up some network, an apostolic network that covers everything. This is a relational network of people together with blueprints that for each area within the nation that are going to come together with godly authority, and they're going to release the nation to come into the fullness of their redemptive gift in God. So God's looking for volunteers who will say, here am I, send me. I'm willing to receive a mandate. And remember, it's nothing to do with age. It's to do with a generation of people who are willing to cross over. So to do that, we need to engage heaven. So Revelation 4:1, after these things, and those things were the opening up the door to Jesus coming on the inside because he's knocking. So our first love gate open, we're now connected because God is on the throne of our life. Heaven now opens the door for us to come. After these things, I looked and behold a door standing open in heaven. That door was the same door that Jacob saw. It's the same door that Enoch went through. It's the same door that Moses, Joshua, and the 70 elders went through. It's the same door that Elijah went through. Paul, John, Jesus, they all went through that door. Jesus had that door open over him continually, and angels were going up and down continually. So then what did he do? The first voice I heard, like the sound of a trumpet, speaking with me, said, come up here and I will show you what is going to take place. So there's going to be a revelation of what we need to know to fulfill what God's calling us to do. So come up here. Immediately I was in the spirit, and behold, a throne was standing in heaven and one was sitting on the throne. So immediately he's engaged in a place of governmental authority in heaven. Now, when we step into heaven, Jesus can take you anywhere. You know, so be open for where Jesus wants to take you. And there are many thrones. There's the throne of grace. There's the throne in the temple. There's the mercy seat in the ark and the tabernacle. There's the throne room with the lightnings and fire and the four living creatures. You know, there are thrones that we can engage. There's the throne where the fire comes out, where Jesus is seated next to the Ancient of Days, as it's described. So we can have an engagement with that. There's an open heaven. Jacob's ladder is going up. And by faith, we can take a step to go through that door, which is open, hear the invitation to come up here, and then by faith, engage it. You may be a seer, and you may see, you may just sense, you may just feel, But allow your spirit by faith to engage. Even if you might struggle with the cognitive engagement, you know, that comes as you practice more and you continue to step in and out and engage. But let your spirit engage it and let your spirit be inspired with what God wants. So what I'd encourage you to do is to close your eyes and to just begin to think of that open door, that ladder going up into heaven. Just picture it in your imagination. But there's a ladder. There's an open door. So by faith, hear that invitation to come up here and take a step through the veil into the realm of the kingdom. And as you step into that realm, Jesus is waiting in the doorway, and we can present ourselves to him as a living sacrifice. The whole atmosphere of heaven is around us. We can breathe in the glory of that atmosphere. But just be open for Jesus to take you and lead you, perhaps to one of those thrones. Perhaps he's going to take you to one of your mountains and he'll invest you on your throne and give you a crown and a mantle. Just be open for him to take you through the veils of the way, the truth, and the life. And you can come before the ark of the presence of God, because we have confidence to enter the holy place through a new and living way that he has inaugurated through us, through his flesh, through his death, that we can step in. And as we come and stand before the ark of God's presence, the four faces of God, lion, ox, eagle, man, let's just open up our hearts and allow him to unveil and write on the tablets of our heart. Allow him to release to us mandates, scrolls, unveiling our destiny, drawing us forward. The very presence of God, Yod, Hey, Vav, Hey, the name of God's presence, representing the lion, the ox, the eagle, and the man. You may be drawn to connect with one of those faces. You can even step into the very name of God and be in him. He can take you back into his heart in eternity. He can show you how to look and see through the eyes of the lion, the ox, the eagle, or the man. Just allow him to lead you, to unveil and reveal more of your sonship. Let him release scrolls for this nation, scrolls for benches of three to form around blueprints, scrolls for ecclesia to be established from a heavenly perspective within New Zealand. Just be open to receive a mandate from heaven. Thank you. It may be that you've never taken your place seated with Christ in the heavenly places. You've never seen your throne or been invested with authority as a Lord on that throne. If that's you, you can engage that with the desire of your heart. I just ask Jesus that you will take each person who's never been enthroned, seated with you in heavenly places, take them to their mountain. Introduce them to the angel assigned to them in heaven. And just give them the throne that they can be seated on. And as Jesus would stand before you, as you take your position in the heavens, seated with him, allow him to place a crown on your head, a mantle around your shoulders, and a scepter in your hand. And allow him to call forth your sonship and affirm you as a joint heir in his kingdom. Allow him to empower you, anoint you, and equip you to rule in heaven and be a gateway of heaven on the earth. Just allow him to engage you and enthrone you and affirm you. Others, he may want to take you to a higher throne of kingship, for governmental benches. Just receive from him the orb and the commission to have charge of the courts, and let him endue you with authority and power. Feel free to carry on in that. We'll take a 20-minute break or so. If you feel you just want to rest in that and carry on, that's great. But we'll just leave it there for a bit.